We shall now move on to post-mortem claims for sales of land and buildings. The relief works in much the same way as the losses on sales of quoted shares, with a couple of important differences. First of all, under Section 191, relief is available for any sales of land and buildings within 3 years of the date of death. Again, to calculate the overall loss, we must aggregate together all profits and losses in the 3-year period, and any resulting loss is deducted from the value of the estate for IHT purposes. If the executors sell any land and buildings at a loss in the 4th year, i.e. between 3 and 4 years from the date of death, these losses can also be counted when working out the overall allowable loss. Any sales at a profit in the 4th year can be ignored, as is the case for quoted shares. If the executors purchase land and buildings within a certain period, such investments will restrict the amount of the allowable loss. This restriction period runs from the date of death until 4 months after the final sale in the first 3 years. As is the case for shares, the restriction is the loss multiplied by the amount invested in land and buildings, divided by gross proceeds of sale. Finally, there are a couple of de minimis rules we must be aware of. When considering sales of land and buildings, we can completely ignore any sales which give rise to a profit or loss of either less than £1,000 or less than 5% of the probate value, whichever is the lower. This means, for example, if a building is sold and the executors make a profit on the sale of, say, £750, we will normally disregard this when calculating the overall loss.
By way of an example, Daniel died on the 7th of December 2009.
Daniel's death estate included 4 buildings whose market values at the date of death should now have appeared on your screen. Therefore, when calculating the IHT payable in the first instance, these death values would have been used. The executors sold all 4 buildings at various stages throughout the administration period, and the gross proceeds of the sale should also have appeared on your screen.
On the 1st of March 2012, the executors bought a plot of land for £100,000. What we will do is demonstrate how these sales of land and buildings will have affected the inheritance tax computation. Daniel died on the 7th of December 2009. We must therefore look at all sales of land and buildings between December 2009 and December 2012. On the 1st of January 2010, the executors sold the house in Camden, making a loss on the sale of £25,000. On the 1st of January 2011, the executors sold the flat in Hampstead, making a profit on the sale of £10,000. The only other sale in the 3-year period is the sale of the flat in Kilburn, which gave rise to a loss of £500. This loss must be disregarded as it is less than £1,000 and is less than 5% of its probate value. The house in Kensington was sold on the 1st of January 2013.
This is outside the 3-year period. However, the loss of £40,000 can be counted because it is a loss on sales of land and buildings in year 4. Remember that any losses in year 4 can be counted, while any profits in year 4 are ignored. We must therefore aggregate together all profits and losses. The sales of these 3 buildings by the executors give rise to an overall loss of £55,000.
The final piece of information we need to consider is the purchase of land for £100,000 on the 1st of March 2012. Purchases of land only need to be considered if they take place within the relevant period. The relevant period runs from the date of death until 4 months after the final sale in the first 3 years. Therefore, the only purchases between December 2009 and the 1st of May 2011 need to be taken into account. The purchase of land on the 1st of March 2012 can therefore be ignored when calculating the overall loss. Note that even though we have taken account of the loss on the house in Kensington on the 1st of January 2013, this does not extend the restriction period for purchases.
The allowable loss for Section 191 purposes is therefore £55,000. The value of land and buildings in Daniel's death estate will therefore be reduced by £55,000. This will generate a repayment of inheritance tax of 40%, i.e. £22,000 will be repaid to the executors. The final post-mortem relief to look at in this session involves the sales of assets which have been valued together with other assets for inheritance tax purposes. The relevant legislation is contained at Section 176. Under this section, a post-mortem claim can be made by the executors if three conditions are satisfied. First, the executor must be selling an asset which was valued with other assets for inheritance tax purposes. This will most commonly mean related property. The executors must sell the asset within 3 years of death to an unconnected third party. Finally, gross proceeds of sale must be less than the amount which was previously charged to inheritance tax. If all three conditions are satisfied, a post-mortem claim under Section 176 can be made. This post-mortem relief works in a different way to sales of quoted shares or sales of land and buildings. If the executors make a claim under Section 176, the amount originally charged to inheritance tax in respect of the asset is removed from the IHT computation. In its place, the executors will substitute the standalone or isolated value of the asset. By standalone value, we mean the value of the asset at the date of death, ignoring the related property rules. This relief is often overlooked and can be difficult to spot, so let's run through a simple example. Here we have a company called Bloggs Investments Limited. Mr. Bloggs has 40% of the shares. Mrs. Bloggs also has 40% of the shares, and their son has the remaining 20%.
Mr. Bloggs died in May 2009.
At the date of death, a 40% holding is worth £100,000, whilst an 80% holding is worth £300,000. As the shares are in an investment company, no business property relief is available. In order to calculate the value of Mr. Bloggs's 40% share, we must take account of the related property rules. We do not simply take the value of a 40% holding. Under the related property rules, Mr. Bloggs is deemed to have 40/80 of an 80% holding. So the amount chargeable to inheritance tax is £150,000. This means that Mr. Bloggs's shares have been valued with other assets, i.e. Mrs. Bloggs's shares, for IHT purposes.
In December 2010, the executors sell Mr. Bloggs's 40% holding for gross proceeds of £110,000.
All of the conditions have been satisfied for our Section 176 claim to be made. The executors have sold assets valued with other assets for IHT purposes, the sale takes place within 3 years of death, and the gross sale proceeds, i.e. £110,000, are less than the amount which was originally charged to inheritance tax. The amount charged to IHT in Mr. Bloggs's estate is £150,000. The effect of a Section 176 claim is to remove the amount originally charged to inheritance tax from the computation. Here, we remove £150,000. In its place, the executors will substitute the standalone value of Mr. Bloggs's 40% holding. At the date of death, a 40% holding of shares in Bloggs Investments Limited was worth £100,000. This amount is now chargeable to inheritance tax. The effect of a Section 176 claim in this instance is to have reduced Mr. Bloggs's death estate by £50,000. This relief is different to sales of quoted shares or sale of land and buildings because the actual amount of the loss is largely irrelevant. In this example, the executors sold the Bloggs shares for £110,000. If they had sold the shares for, say, £95,000, the result would have been exactly the same, i.e. we would have removed £150,000 from the computation and replaced it with a standalone value of £100,000.
There are two practice questions to complete this session. We need to calculate the loss incurred by the executors on the sales of quoted shares in the 12 months after Marco's death. To do this, we simply compare probate value with gross proceeds of sale. In March 2010, The executors sold half of the shares in Derby PLC for £35,000. All of the Derby PLC shares were worth £60,000 at the date of Marco's death, so half of them had a probate value of £30,000. The executors therefore made a profit on the sale of £5,000. In July 2010, the executors sold all of the shares in Buxton PLC for £30,000. These were worth £50,000 at the date of death, so the sale gives rise to a loss of £20,000. If we aggregate together the profit and the loss, the overall loss is £15,000. The executors purchased units in a unit trust in August 2010 for £13,000. This is within 2 months of the sale in July 2010, so this purchase will affect the computation.
The loss is restricted by the amount invested divided by total gross proceeds. The amount invested is £13,000, and the total proceeds from the table are £65,000. The restriction in the loss is therefore £3,000, leaving an allowable loss under Section 179 of £12,000. This will reduce the value of Marco's chargeable estate and result in a repayment of inheritance tax.
The 3,000 shares sold by the executors have to be apportioned between those which formed part of the death estate and those which were acquired after death. 10,000 shares were held at death, and a further 2,000 shares were brought afterwards. Therefore, out of the 3,000 shares sold by the executors, 10,000 out of 12,000, i.e. 10/12, were held at death. This gives 2,500 shares. The next step is therefore to work out the loss on the sale of 2,500 Vivi PLC shares. 3,000 shares were sold by the executors for £7,500. Therefore, the proceeds of 2,500 shares is £6,250. From this, we deduct the probate value of 2,500 shares. Gina held 10,000 shares at her death. These were quoted at 318 pence to 326 pence. The quarter-up price is therefore 320 pence. The probate value of 10,000 shares is therefore £32,000. 2,500 are sold, which equates to a quarter of the original shares. So the probate value of these is £32,000 multiplied by one quarter, being £8,000. The loss on the sale of 2,500 shares is therefore £1,750. However, this is not the allowable loss, as we need to restrict this for the shares acquired by the executors. We do this by taking the loss of £1,750 and multiplying this by purchases over sales. Shares costing £5,600 were purchased, 3,000 shares were sold for proceeds of £7,500. Therefore, the loss is restricted by £1,307. The allowable loss is therefore £443. This concludes this session on post-mortem reliefs.